Hi, listeners, and welcome to the David Crick Podcast. I'm your host, Britt Lawton, and today I'm welcoming somebody that's been part of the David Crick community for quite a while now, but he's new to the David Crick Workshop. So, welcome, Thureshan Governor.
Hey, thanks, Britt. Lovely to be here.
Where I always love to start is giving our listeners insights as to who you are and how you came to be part of the David Crick family.
I'll start more broadly. Like I'm a curious creative that is trying to tap into the zeitgeist of where we at right now. And I think there's multiple ways to do it. I'm formally trained as an architect. I'm from Cape Town and decided to make a move to the big bad city in order to expand one's thinking and craft. And so trained as an architect, and I'm finding that the world that David Crick presents is one quite foreign in some way, but incredibly familiar at the same time. So I'm enjoying that space.
Yeah, it's great to hear of your background in architecture as well, because I'd love to hear from your opinion what the maybe similarities and major contrasts are between the two fields.
I think that the architectural discipline is quite an applied science, so it means that what you would produce creatively will have a tangible output. That's the kind of normative way of practice. I'm interested in some of the more conceptual or radical thinking around what the profession needs to be in a context like South Africa that is wanting so much more from everybody. So it's asking a lot more. And I think that I find that the discipline needs to think a little bit more expansively about what it needs to be and what it needs to become. So I go about inviting any other practice, a method, technique, that or conversation that will help me augment some of the gaps within what we do. So, and that's what the workshop experience affords me.
Nice. Have you ever worked in printmaking before? Have you ever worked in like maybe other mediums like painting or?
No, I haven't. So I'm a novice in call it the approach to fine art. I think that our architectural drawings are quite prescriptive and instructional, that we are a lot of the time is spent putting drawings together that communicates to others how to execute something. That's the majority of our drawings. There's a more, I find, exciting part of the architectural drawing process is the conceptualization of a set of ideas that you're putting together. Now, that those ideas are sometimes beyond our vocabulary. We can't say it. It's not in the books, but it lives somewhere in your intuition or your ability to just find things. So it's just beyond your comprehension. So I like when drawings are needed to help bring new vocabularies and languages together in a discipline that is seeking something. So this is the relation to fine art. So the fine art is new to me. I don't know too much about it. I've been introduced to it quite late in my life, in my late 20s, through Marcus Neustadt and Stephen Hobbs, funny enough, who, when I met with them as a young architect in Johannesburg, they shared with me some of their insights and ways of drawing. And when I had these conversations with these two artists, were the first two artists that I ever met in my life, yeah, I was really seduced about how congruent they can keep an idea or preoccupation they have, and they've got a corresponding artifact and output through a creative piece. I'm like, wow, that's incredible. And I'm saying that in my world, I don't have the luxury to have my work uncontaminated with economics, gravity, cost in our pieces. So I'm like, isn't that incredible to have a piece that is so pure to what it is that you are concerning yourself with? So I find that the fine art space for me is rather new, really intriguing for me, and I feel like it has something to offer my discipline in some way. I don't know what it is, but I'm keen to mess around with that. So no, I'm not trained as a fine artist. I have an appreciation for it. So I like composition, I like mark making, I like techniques, and I like the way it's received, but I'm rather new to producing it. But having said that, I've also spent a good few years teaching at the Graduate School of Architecture, looking at advanced design research. And in that space, I was able to explore a set of ideas and interests, methods and representation. And that was a really rich space to think about drawing as a medium to communicate things that you both see and that you speculate upon, you know, so things that you observe in the built environment. So, so in a funny way, I'm coming into a fine arts kind of home with a very different discipline and a naivety on how things are made. It's kind of frightening and quite exciting at the same time.
But I think you've come to the right place to explore all the things that you're speaking about. And it's quite fortuitous that it was like through Stephen Hobbs and Marcus, who are also kind of part of our community, our extended family, as we like to call it. But you tapped onto a few things that I wanted to bring back. One was intuition. Maybe if there's anything that you do to get into a creative flow, is there like anything in your, either in your architectural practice or in those creative pursuits that you do that like helps you tap into that creative intuition?
I wish I had that power to summon that creative resource. I think that maybe it's bigger than I am, and it comes to me when I do certain things. So there's a pattern about when I'm able to have greater creative expression and insight, and some I don't. So I find I'm most inspired, but I can dig into deeper moments of intuition when I'm out in the field. So I need to be out in the built environment, I need to be walking streets, I need to be engaging with people. And what often happens is there's a confluence between how someone is experiencing a space and how that space contributes to it. So all of these things are quite visceral, it's immersive, and then I'm like, I see certain things playing out that I'm interested to document or critique or comment or say, hey, something can come out. So often it's out in the field, and I enjoy the field a lot. So you'll see it in some of the drawings that I put out. There's a reference to being quite immersive in a place, because I draw a lot from place. So in a strange way, I'd almost see myself as a, not a conduit, but someone who walks around with a divining stick, right? Who's got their senses about on all the time, and when there's something of interest, be it something violent or inspiring, when I say violent, I mean violates my inner constitution, or something that is quite inspiring and seductive, I'm like, I'm drawn towards it. So, and then that takes me down a really interesting rabbit hole where I may often write about it. I keep a sketchbook with me, and it's just about putting words to these things. And I think while I do that, I am interested in new languages, new practices that are being born out of a place of extreme necessity, which a lot of our South African cities are about. So, and while these things are being practiced, I feel I have an obligation as a creative, both as an observer and someone who speculates on it, to capture this best I can. So I do that with the mediums I have, which is architectural drawings and references to some of my fine art colleagues out there. That's the best.
Wonderful. So, I mean, obviously you're very influenced and inspired by your direct environment. So yeah. I wanted to know if you mentioned your move from Cape Town to Johannesburg, like has that had a major influence on your practices, either of your practices, creative and architectural?
I think the operative word is move. I think I'm perpetually in a state of transience. I think that move from Cape Town to Johannesburg is perpetual. I'm moving between these two cities all the time, and I come to conceptualize my time in Johannesburg as being permanently transient. So I like this home, but I like moving through it. So I leave for extended periods of time, and it gives me great comfort to see myself as a traveler. But yet it seems quite permanent, but I'm quite light in the way I conceptually see myself to this place. So this thing about moving between these two extreme cities, I find productive, because I'm able to have an appreciation for the grit that Joburg presents itself with, and that it can be quite an exhausting experience being in this industrial city that in some ways falling apart at the seams when you look around you. But through its seeming breakdown, there's a rebirth of something coming up. And I find that different to Cape Town, which may be quite static and stable in terms of its social spatial configuration, Johannesburg, it's in a state of flux. Now, that state of flux really excites me. I think that, when I say it excites me and troubles me simultaneously. And I'm trying to identify what are the things that I may deem productive and what do I deem to be quite concerning. And I feel as a creative, as an observer, I have a kind of a duty to present that in the clearest way possible.
Right. You were talking about how spaces kind of dictate how people navigate through it. I wondered if you can maybe elaborate on that concept a little bit.
Yeah, so I think it's like being a flaneur, right? That I was introduced to this idea of how Europeans would navigate the urban environments to just take it in quite a leisurely way. And I like that because it means that you are moving not with any great intent or purpose, but your purpose is to soak up the environment as you move through it and take it in. So I really like that as an idea. And then when I come back to South Africa, and particularly Johannesburg, your inability to do that in your everyday life, right? You have to make an effort to become a flaneur here. And then the thing about being a flaneur here is not challenging, but you're reminded about the privilege around being a flaneur, because walking and being immersed in the space, that the majority of our citizens in this city do that, but out of extreme necessity and the dire circumstances. And then I think about the extreme disparities that we have here. So the thing about walking and immersing yourself in the place, it is one of the stark reminders of the extreme politics that we are operating within, and to say, how do we work with this thing? So that's, for me, is the obvious example of being in the built environment and take it in. And I think the closest example about using this productively and creatively may come in a set of experiments that I did in the early days of the practice. It was called Urban Walks. So, and the idea was inspired by a group of thinkers called the Situationists, where they would walk randomly in parts of the city and develop a psychogeography from that experience they had. And what I was leaning on to say, let's develop a 60-minute walk. So we just literally walk for 60 minutes and we would follow strange things like a person with the red cap or someone with the blue bag, but you needed a protagonist to take you. You can't walk with your experience. So you would be being led by this protagonist, and we would be walking around with cameras and photographing things that you are drawn to. Come back into the studio after that walk, and we were given 60 minutes to produce a collage of that. Now, what I found valuable about this thing, about taking images that you found on a particular walk that you would not have ordinarily done out of necessity, but someone else is leading you, you get to see things differently. And I wanted to take those images and ask a question of, what can we imagine that's radically different, but it needs to use what we've seen? So the thing about juxtaposition becomes important, where I can take a piece of that street corner or that part of the building anatomy or that lived experience and reassemble them in some way. So this idea of being recombining what you see today and putting it together in an interesting way becomes quite exciting. So the thing about collage as a technique and juxtaposition is really valuable, because it conjures up something in your imagination that you didn't see before, but yet it is plausible because all of those things in that image are from a walk that you've just done right now. So I find that is the closest example I can find to be what I would describe as radically pragmatic or pragmatically radical, meaning that you want to put something forward as a speculation that's quite radical, but it doesn't become productive for me if it stays in the realm of fantasy. I want to be radical about a speculation, but say that it's incredibly plausible to do in what we're putting together now. So there's a pragmatism in the way I like to see the critique that I put forward.
Mm, no, that's an awesome example. I mean, that's such a cool idea to do something like that. And then I know you've mentioned language a few times as well, and you also spoke briefly now about this idea of narrative. In your works that you've done in the workshop, there are often words that crop up. What your thoughts are on language and communication in relation to your artworks?
I feel like when you're working in environments that are in such great states of flux here, we can't be limited by our language for naming what it is, because sometimes what is becoming is actually, it exceeds our limited vocabulary. So, because otherwise I think if we name it with the languages we're familiar with, we're actually undermining the inventiveness of the chaos and the friction that's playing itself out. So I almost want to suspend naming something, and you'll find sometimes in the works I enjoy putting codes on things. So say, we're not naming it. All we're saying is that phenomena X and phenomena B, and the ability to be quite mathematical about it, to say we'll put these different things together and what we'd mean by it. So it's a kind of a feeds my scientific interest about saying how we can put different parts together however we wish in a creative way. But the point I'm trying to make about language is, like, the things that we see here are more exciting and it sings our capacity to actually name it. So can we suspend naming it but describe it? And I find one of the best ways to describe it is by using notation, not actual words, or using fragments of words, or messing up the words in some way and putting symbols and languages that you don't understand. So it's indecipherable to the person who's observing it itself. So I like not naming it too soon as it's becoming. And the other thing for me around language is the need to draw, because I think that the drawing for me is one of the easiest ways to describe new languages, new vocabularies, because somewhere built into this thing, it's a convergence of both your intuition, your observations. It's coming together, and it's like, I don't know what it is, but through this thing I can sense what it feels like. And this thing of sensing for me is so much more sophisticated than naming, because it's quite prescriptive. I'm like, no, sensing, we can all feel something, we don't know exactly what it is, and it's ingraspable is what I like doing. So if you're on the edge of something and trying to decipher and understand, it's like, I think we must be careful to name too soon. So I'm interested only to observe and maybe describe relations between things, and then for others to observe it later, because it's almost premature to put a name on something. But what I'm comfortable to put on name is put names on certain fragments or terms on certain things. So often there's an adjective in the work, you're doing something. For example, prospecting is an important thing that comes out. And I like the idea of prospecting, just to take one word, if you're talking about language, because of its meanings, specifically in Johannesburg, because of the formation of this big metropolis, because of a set of prospectors who were really powerful protagonists in showing value, mineral value, obviously, through gold, and based on that, on their efforts to seek with grit and determination and to put something and change physically the landscape, I find similarly we need to maybe work on that spirit of prospecting. It doesn't have to be material and minerals, but we could be prospecting for ideas, new relations, new tensions, and start surfacing that. So in leaning back on our prospecting and gold mining heritage, I feel that there's a lot that's coming up here that we need to mine through, scavenge, seek, and look differently.
That's wonderful. You seem to like to be in that precipice of not fully knowing what it is, but enjoying that exploration of what it is.
It's similar to what I was saying, what you were talking about, home and travel, right? So if you see yourself as a voyeur, but also a voyeur that's kind of prospecting, and I'm quite inspired by Alexander von Humboldt and Charles Darwin, when they were on the escapades and adventures going into new worlds. And when they were in the new worlds, they would see different ecosystems, ecologies, species, understand their formations, their colorations, and you're going with such a keen eye to see this thing. And what you do is you document it. You take these things and you start dissecting to understand the anatomy of it, but importantly, the relations between different parts. So that's what I take an interest in, living on that edge. But I also want to, it's not, you gotta find where that edge of becoming is all the time. So I do enjoy being immersed in those spaces.
That's amazing. And in the same sense, is that how you approached your printmaking experience at the workshop?
It's hard for me to say that I approached it with any deliberate intent.
Okay.
I wish I could tell you I did. Okay, maybe I can tell you how I approached it, because it was one where it was a invitation that was presented by May and David, and I'm like, oh, that's an interesting thing to explore. But when I came into the workshop, it was one overwhelming, because it's like you're surrounded by an environment that supports fine artists who are really trained and established, and I am not part of that world, but I have a set of preoccupations and concerns. So I thought what I found playing itself out here was like a space to be very vulnerable, which I was, right? Very, very vulnerable, but also quite curious to know where this thing is going. So in some way, being in that space was to be in your capable hands and just let's see where this thing goes. And I think that no obligation was put onto me, and I felt I don't want to put an obligation on myself into the space and say, let's just explore. And that for me was a real gift, to produce works with no expectation at the end of it, because what came out of it was just an incredibly playful exploration of things and interests, and it happened to translate into something that's quite personal but incredibly clarifying, if that's a word, you know, because I think I entered it with saying I'm interested in a few things, but as the drawings were being produced with the techniques, I started to limit my palette. Yes, so there's many things that's available, but I was interested in a few methods and techniques, and I wanted to hone myself on that. I think that was quite helpful. And the other thing was that the things I have an interest in, be it around forensics, ways of seeing, cartography, instrumentation, navigational instrumentation, all kind of found its way in those drawings. And I'm like, oh, that's the kind of thing I'm interested in. So when I look at those, I think there's about 8 pieces that was produced in this thing. They are wildly different because they were experimental and didn't have any intent. They weren't named before. There was maybe a word floating about, but they were produced with a naivety. And what was helpful was to reflect on those outputs a day later, a week later, and like, I see certain patterns and trends or things picking up, and that is what I got excited about.
No, it's wonderful. And even just seeing your excitement about it, I mean, to think if this is your first experience, it's so exciting to see how this is going to continue to develop. I also actually wanted to know about your color palette, because you've got quite an interesting choice throughout the images that you've produced. I wondered if there is intent behind those choices.
Yeah, so the intent was more about how colors relate to each other versus the color in itself. So it's not like there was a green or blue or pink that was chosen. It was more a thing of saying that I'm looking for a contrast. I'm looking for a primary color that will hold a space, and it needed to be bold and ridiculous. So that was the description I put onto the color, and what was available I would take. And then there was a color that would serve that to be complemented and to figure out what it is. So there is typically one of them, and I tried not to use the same color over and over, but it was just to see what happens. And then you find that things like the black mark, I really enjoy. I find it's a really nice registration to have, and I kept that in place. And then we also messed around with these transfers where there would be an inherited image, because I like the idea of inheritance, that we don't work in an environment where it is completely disconnected in a vacuum. I feel like we're always wrestling with something that we have, and I find in a lot of the works there's something that marks the page, and it's once you do that, there's a response to that that I'm trying to be in conversation with. So it's not too dissimilar to the way I explore my own practice, that you don't work in this bubble of where there's no informants, nothing to respond to. So I wanted to respond to something and have the drawing charged with something inherited, but also to reinterpret it became quite important for me. I mean, that pronto for me was really surprising and extraordinary because of the layering. Like, I think I was intrigued with the way the drawing gets produced and the layering it, and the fact that you're working in an inverted process, which is quite nice, because if I wanted to write, I had to write backwards or find a print and invert the print and then draw on it. So I really liked what that allowed for. I find that the technique that I was exploring, I liked that it was quite forgiving. So it meant that it allowed for tentativeness in the way it is, because it was quite honest, because I was very tentative and uncertain about things, and that uncertainty is presented in the works. You'll see it, like someone's trying to figure something out, not sure about the colors and what things are going to happen. And then as you start the drawing and you get beyond the anxiety of the first mark, there's a way of drawing heavier and reinforcing certain things, and then that becomes bolder. So there is a layering that describes maybe the confidence or maybe assertiveness of the mark corresponds with the assertiveness of a set of ideas and feelings, right? So that's what's playing itself out. And I like that you can read all of that on one drawing. So it's not erased, it's in there. So all the preparatory dialogue and narrative is in those drawings. I like that. And then the thing about pronto. The pronto for me was a technique that I wanted to... I spoke to Sarah about it and saying, Sarah, can we make the pronto the inherited piece specifically? And the inherited object, I used a lot of things that help you navigate. So this, if you're in unknown worlds or you're trying to feel your way around, you need an instrument to help you navigate. And sometimes how I see those instruments, they're almost like prosthetics. They help you do something that the human body just can't do. So if it's something about bringing light into dark areas, that's an additive to your limits. The same with a periscope, or the same with the sextant, this nautical navigational instrument. So those pronto prints are always talking to some kind of instrument that helps you navigate, and that became the basis upon which I could put another commentary on it. And you'll find that in the way I explored some of them, it was about saying that there's a protagonist, there's someone looking and using this device, but there also are there's subjects in it. There's an othering that is playing out through this device, and I found that interesting because it's talking to some kind of colonial reference points and describing the power relationships in the way we relate to ourselves as human beings. So that played itself out quite strongly. And then there's also these markings of grids where you are attempting to sense make in moments of great uncertainty and mystification. So like if things are chaotic and problematic, what are our efforts as human beings to sense make? So you'll find that tension is trying to play itself out there. I can't tell you that was deliberate. Yeah. It just happened to be the space that I was in and how I was exploring, and then reflecting afterwards, I'm like, yeah, but that's what it is. That's what's happening. Yeah. So those are some of the things around the techniques that was played out. Yeah. You know. And then in some of the drawings, this thing about the, not just the protagonist, but what you see, I like the idea that sometimes there's relations here that we don't see. And there's a certain interest for me in describing what those relations are and rendering them visible and giving it a name and saying, oh, how do we relate to each other? How do things relate to each other? And this relationship between our social practices and our infrastructure, they're always in some kind of dynamic relation. And there's a power dynamic behind that piece. So that's what I'm excited in architecturally. And now I'm finding that through this exercise at the workshop, I'm like, I can describe it through a set of drawings that I didn't even know one can produce. So it played out in some kind of serendipitous way.
Yeah, I think it's amazing that there is such consistency, even just hearing from the beginning your description of your architectural practice and your interests, and how it's kind of fortuitously come out in this body of work where you weren't even going in there saying, this is what I'm going to make. And I think that's quite powerful because you're like letting us into your brain and your way of thinking.
But I think that's a nice way to be, you know, to embark on a practice, a journey, or any endeavor, not knowing it all, because I'm trained to plan things, right? So as an architect and an urban designer, I need to describe a level of predictability about how things are going to unfold. And yet in my practice, if I have to take on the creative work or any maybe big endeavor, you may not plan too much. It's actually about not planning too much, but having a really clear set of intentions, or developing an inner constitution to say, these are the things that I have a favorability towards, a curiosity towards, and then you journey forward. Because I feel once you've got that internal kind of compass built in, like you feel quite confident going to any places because you feel that your judgments are in place and calibrated to do it. So that for me works with how that process worked. They had no idea what was going to be coming out. but did have a sense that it needed to talk to looking. And I think that in my conversation with Sarah, we had a nice conversation about where our discipline sits as architects, that in a normative way we produce drawings of a future that's yet to come. So if it's a house plan or a building, like, what we've drawn is about to be realized. At the same time, I spent a lot of my career drawing things that were of the past, of things of quite ethnographic drawings. Those are things that I really enjoy. So I find that it's nice to produce drawings that are bifocal. It can look backwards and record histories and simultaneously speculate on futures at the same time. So that moment or that arena of putting those things together, you are keeping two time frames in place simultaneously.
Mm. Having seen your images and now having this conversation, I think I'm understanding them a lot better, you know, and responding to them initially, my initial thought, just if I may say, I was just like very excited about them because I love the colors and they draw you in, and then there's this like text and this like dynamic combination of lines and shapes and imagery. It was intriguing, and I think for me to now understand what your thought process is and your interests and how you've kind of pieced it all together, it's very exciting. So I'm looking forward to our audience seeing these works. We can't wait to start promoting them and see how this relationship develops and keep having you visit the David Crook workshop.
Thank you. It's something you were touching on right now about, I think that in some way they are commentaries of a way of being right now, where there's the flux that we talk about. It can be quite uncomfortable because it's, I'm finding it quite volatile, sometimes traumatic, in how our cities are shaping our lives. It's quite dramatic. And in one of the drawings, as you were talking, I'm just reminded about something, about being in states of extreme volatility. I don't think that's going to be going away in these parts of our worlds and cities. So if it's not going to be going away, what then do we need to do to help us navigate the turbulence that we experience? And those prosthetics I was talking about, for me, is where the architectural project comes in. To say, as an architect or creative, how do you create these devices that allow us to occupy these states of flux, volatility, and turbulence with a level of not just sanity, but to do it in a productive way? So you'll see one of the drawings, you'll see things moving about, and the horizon line is quite clear on these things. And we will be moving all the time, but the vessels that we create should help us navigate those experiences with as much love, prosperity, abundance as possible. So it's not to shy away from it and say, we're living in tough times, and then retreat. I'm not up for retreating. I'm going to say, let's just lean into it, but can we create these really interesting support structures to help us exist with this wild times?
Well, like you said, it's I suppose creating new tools or being inventive with our existing knowledge to find new ways of engaging with our environment, which is exciting to explore. And I think that's probably why you enjoy your job so much as well.
Yeah. I enjoy it. It's challenging and interesting, you know, and this work has been interesting for me because I find the very different to my work, where the drawing is almost at the beginning of what the final output is. So if you take any building project or intervention that you'd be making, you'd be producing the drawing in order to realize an artifact that is experienced and one-to-one and built out there. So in some way, the drawing is not what's precious. What gets communicated in my practice and discipline is the artifact at the end of it. And here through the workshop, it's interesting that there is no obligation. It actually, the drawing is itself a thing, an artifact, and then there's that idea of framing it and putting your name on this thing, and then it's done. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting, because in some way I have less of an interest in that as an artifact, those eight pieces, because what they've done for me in my practice and in the short time I had with the David Crook workshop was they've galvanized a set of loose thoughts into something to say, that are quite clear very quickly, it becomes very clear. So this is what one needs to, what needs to happen. So I'm finding that the works are very generative in shaping my own practice out there. So it seems that I'm holding two worlds here, because this is not my core space that I operate in, but it's allowed me to shift gear, work in a space without any expectation, find it incredibly productive in synthesizing a set of complex ideas, and then saying, how do I go about realizing them in another way of working? So I'm finding that quite challenging and interesting at the same time.
Right, and that's amazing to hear. I mean, so many artists do refer or use print in conjunction with their main medium almost, mm-hmm. As a way to experiment and to maybe tap into something that they wouldn't have tried before if they haven't been exposed to this process, because it is very process driven.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also the magic in every step of the way, like you mentioned, how it changes from the matrix, from the drawing to the print, to the reveal of the print, to the signing. Every step of the way, it kind of changes or shifts that object, which is, it's a wonderful process to be a part of. And it's great that you've kind of been open enough to experience it and to have takeaways from it. So I think that's exactly what the workshop's all about. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us. And we're looking forward to promoting all of your work.
But thank you so much to you and the team. Really, really appreciate it. Wonderful experience.